This week, reports from print industry events in both London and Frankfurt. Plus, Monocle's editor-in-chief tells us about the latest edition of Monocle magazine. All that ahead here on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Let's start off by crossing to Switzerland. I'm delighted to say Monocle's editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, joins us now. On, Tyler, I think it's right to say a bit of a sort of a Middle Europa tour this week.
It is a Middle Europa tour indeed. Tom, it started off actually where I'm in our bureau in Zurich right now. It started in Zurich, went up to Hamburg. And for anyone reading the FT Weekend, you can also check in and hear about my overnight rail journey, which was a delight. And I think that's a whole other topic about, Tom, I think there needs to be some type of rolling library meets kiosk, because the idea of setting off in Zurich, waking up in Hamburg, absolutely brilliant, lovely train, Austrian operated, you know, could have been better here and there. But what I was missing the club car, because they don't quite tuck you into bed, but you get on the train at 8 o'clock and you set off into the night, but you want a nightcap and you might want to sit down and read the newspapers, etc. And I was thinking, so I was missing that club car that you could have a nice whiskey in, read the papers, a few magazines, and then get tucked in. Anyway,
exactly. Well, maybe we should get a stack, like one of those little hand carts going, and I could chase after the train on an adjacent track and throw newspapers in like a sort of paperboy on rails. That would work.
I like it. So that was good. But I was in Hamburg, the VDZ, which is, of course, really the major sort of print industry body in Germany. Now, they've got their big jamborees coming up with Angela Merkel, I believe, in very early November. But this was a sub-event. I was talking at a distribution conference, which is, of course, the people who really have to fill in that distance between getting magazine from printer into the postal system or certainly onto the newsstand. And it was the great and the good of German publishing, discussing retail, a variety of different challenges, in a very nice harbor view set up in the heart of Hamburg.
So, sounds lovely, Tyler. And just on that point, I know we often, when we catch up, we talk about distribution models and how that's often, one of the most interesting fronts in the sort of publishing campaign very broadly. Lots of innovation. Was that what people were talking about? Were you encouraged by what you heard there?
I think there was a feeling, and part of this is obviously what we, of course, have been reporting on. And when we have, of course, voices around the microphone, we do hear about nice little spikes that are happening in the business. I think also innovations that have happened because, of course, it has been a very difficult time for many people in the publishing sector. So you're just seeing interesting channels to market. You're hearing about people launching different types of initiatives in terms of how do they reach a defined audience. So I think, again, a small crisis, a big crisis, I think, has created a number of interesting business opportunities. But again, I think the Germans are feeling generally good about the state of the newsstand. And that was sort of neatly sort of brings us to an event that we had at the end of the last week. On Thursday evening, we did the launch of our Swiss special. So anyone who, of course, some readers should have the new issue in their letterboxes by now, the November issue. And we've sort of done it, as we classically do, a nice 60-plus page supplement on Switzerland. And then we did a little discussion on Thursday evening with Jeremy Leslie that was on the scene. We had the editor of Reportagen, Daniel Puntes-Bernet, and then we had Christoph Zürcher from the Neue Zürcher Zeitung having a talk about two things. I mean, one, of course, just what is the state of the magazine industry? And I think it was great to talk to our readers and advertisers and media partners. But the other side of it is this question of when you have a very wealthy market, when you have a city like Zurich, which has the highest purchasing power in Europe, one of the highest purchasing power rates in the world, why is print resilient here? And one of the things, I think the answer that everyone came up with in the room is because there is a great distribution system here. You have the culture of the kiosk, and the kiosk appears everywhere. It's in the hotel lobby. It's in the little country train station. And if you can get magazines in front of people, they're going to buy them. And I think that was, it was interesting that that everyone sort of came up, you know, came up with this sort of very, very simple fact. We know this, as long as there is, you know, someone goes the mile in the distance and there are shelves stocked with newspapers and magazines, well, people are going to buy them. If you take them away and you replace them with cans of Diet Coke, well, clearly there's no print there for them. And it, obviously that's the conundrum that people are dealing with in markets like the UK, Australia, and many other places.
And Tyler, just on the Swiss issue, I'm right in thinking there's quite a special cover, but you need to be maybe in Switzerland or know somebody there to get eyes on it.
Indeed. And this is much to the delight of Jeremy Leslie. Jeremy's, I can't believe that, because, you know, what is this? And he spotted our special Swiss cover, and it's an homage to the graphic design artist, Josef Müller Brochmann, and it is, we have a completely Helvetica, or I used to say Confederation Helvetica cover. So completely different typeface, very Swiss, very stark. The same St. Bernard on both covers, but typographically different. And it is a one-off. So it is only for this issue only, and only within the borders of the Confederation Helvetica, Switzerland. So yes, you will have to find someone who you know here. I think there might be a couple of copies available to buy at monocle.com, but not very many. So a nice little trick, a nice little innovation for the Swiss newsstand.
Collector's edition. We like the sound of that. Tyler, always good to catch up with you. Where will we hear from you next?
Oh, I think I'm going to be sitting on your desk on bright and early on Monday morning.
Good stuff. See Alrighty. You then. Now, you may not have heard of FIP, although if you're listening to The Stack, you might just have done. I'll tell you something you can be almost certain of, and that's that the people who produce your favourite magazines definitely know of it. It's an international media network that brings together some of the industry's biggest players, including more than 5,000 magazine titles. The 41st biennial FIP World Congress took place in the past week at London's Tobacco Dock, attracting more than 600 delegates from 45 countries. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco attended the event, and here he is in Studio One to tell us all about it. Fernando, FIP, an event on quite a scale.
Absolutely. And to all the main publishers are there. That's what I was very much impressed. You know, I think if you are in this industry, I think it's an event that, you know, you must go. So Condé Nast was there, Hearst was there, Time was there, even some smaller publishers as well. And what I liked about it, it's very, very much international. You know, we had a lot of media from Japan, from China, even from my home country, Brazil as well. And as you know, the event happens every 2 years in a different city. So, in fact, this year was supposed to be in Warsaw, but they had to change because they had some problems with the current government there. So they decided to relocate to London. That already tells you how international it is. And my first interview, which we're going to play now, Tom, is actually with James Hewis. He's the president and CEO of FIP. And his opening speech, you know, I was very glad. I felt proud. And I think you'd be proud as well. He mentioned Monocle, our very own summer newspaper. He said, as one of examples of how print media, you know, you can still be successful. You can still launch a new product. Shall we hear a clip of him?
James, it's a fantastic lineup this year. But tell us about, are there any main themes for this year's event?
Well, aside from all the usual themes that you get in the media industry at the moment, things like paid content, augmented reality, the question of reader revenue, question of how we substitute traditional print business with a multi-platform business. Really, I think one of the big themes for us is listening to the audience and listening to what media companies are saying. So one of the themes this year is really to try and understand what the challenges are facing the media industry right now so that we can use those to build better products and services for them as a trade organization aimed at helping them to do business overseas.
Oh, and I love your opening speech this morning, where you gave actually some positive examples about the industry, because, you know, it can be said that, you know, the print industry can be quite negative at times. I think it's good to know that actually there are some positive examples of how the industry is going.
Yeah, that's right. And I used Monocle as a positive example this morning. And I think it really is a good success story in print. The things that you guys have been doing with your annuals and with your summer newspapers are a model that other people can follow to show that there's plenty of life left in print. We're very lucky today that we've got a large delegation here sponsored by the Department for International Trade, the UK government entity, which brings together 10 publishers and suppliers, smaller businesses from the UK who are looking to do business with the rest of the world. And as I travel around the world with this job, I find the same pattern in every market. Print may be suffering some problems in some of the larger sectors, but in the independent space is thriving. There are new publications starting every day and people starting magazines in all sorts of different areas.
Tell us a bit more about the organization. I mean, it's very international. I mean, we have, how many countries do we have in this year's fair?
We have about 50 countries at this year's fair. We are a very international organization. FIP has been around for about 90 years. It was originally formed in France as a way for French and Spanish publishers, print publishers in those days, to regularly meet and to have a kind of formal mechanism for meeting. And it's grown since then to become a global organization. So we like to say that we have members everywhere from Japan to Argentina, and we do. Increasingly multi-platform members, so we have not just magazine companies, but also digital pure plays. We have event companies. We have a large supplier base. We have a large number of consultants. So we're trying to be very representative of the global industry. We see ourselves now as an organization for content creators. So if you create content or you're involved in the content creation supply chain, you need to come and talk to us. And of course, our primary goal is to help people do business internationally. So we're a cross-border trade organization.
And finally, talking about FIP International, you also have a specific event for Asia, which is happening next year, right? Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, sure. So we try to do regional events as well as the World Congress. The Congress that we're at today only happens every 2 years and moves around the world. And that obviously limits the extent to which our members and even non-members can come and access some of the great content, the presentations, and have the networking opportunities that they get from coming to Congress. So we try to do things regionally. We have in the past done events in South America and Latin America. But Asia obviously is a really important market for media. It's a really important market for us. So we try to go regularly to Asia and have a FIP Asia event. This year we've been extremely lucky. We've got a partnership with the China Periodicals Association. We'll be holding that in September of next year in Wuhan in China, which I'm very excited about. Not a city I've ever been to before. One of the great things about this job is you get to visit new places, and that's going to be a new place for me.
Very interesting to hear there, Fernando. And to pick up on what you said as we spoke into that item, this idea... innovation isn't only digital in publishing. You know, you can be at the cutting edge of innovation and still working in paper. I think that's really important. Who else did you catch up with?
Anton, the amount of people there, you know, I had to pick and choose really some of the best. Again, keeping on the FIP realm, I spoke to the FIP chairman, Ralf Büchi, CEO of Ringier Axel Springer, Switzerland.
I know the organization very well, and my problem is not that I have to fill my days, as you can guess probably, but I really believe in the necessity of having an international platform such as the FIPP. And if nobody is taking care of it, well, the organization will not be able to remain active and successful in the future. So I'm very pleased and very honored to be the new chairman of FIPP. And you know, when I met my colleagues at the board of FIPP for the first time, when I joined the board in 2008, they told me, you know, this is really the place where you can do immediate business with your colleagues all over the world. And now we are standing here at the marketplace of the FIPP World Congress. And if you look around, you see everywhere colleagues who are doing business. So this is still a value in itself. But however, times have changed since 2008. And I think today FIPP should be the platform of international collaboration, of learning and of exchange of media companies, magazine publishers, digital publishers all over the world. More than ever, we need to collaborate, we need to learn from each other, we need to learn from the best, and FIP could be and will be, that's our target, an excellent platform for this in the future.
But now let's talk about your group a little bit as well. Tell us first of all, what are your main titles at the moment?
Ringier is a company that is based mainly on two pillars. One pillar is publishing. We publish Switzerland's leading daily newspaper and the leading news site, which is called Blick and Blick CH. And Ringier is also a publisher on an international scale. We run this joint venture with Axel Springer in Eastern Europe. Most of these countries where we are present, we publish the leading daily newspaper, a series of magazines, and also some poor player in the digital field. We today have a lot of initiatives going on by collaboration, for example, with Business Insider from the US, but also with the launch of own digital brands such as Noise. My colleague Jovan Prochis presented that here to the public, and it's, I think, a very interesting attempt to reach a new millennial public. Beside that, we run a lot of magazines in Switzerland itself, and that's not the end of the world. We are also present in Africa, in several African countries, in Nigeria, in Ghana, in Kenya, as well as in two Asian countries, in Vietnam and Myanmar, with digital news platforms. That's the one pillar. The other pillar are classifieds. We are running leading classified platforms on jobs, cars, and real estate in several countries in Eastern Europe, in Switzerland, and in Africa.
In a sense, we've kind of tasked you with taking the temperature of this Congress and getting for us, helping us to sort of gauge some of the key narratives. We're not alone, though, on the stack in trying to bring people a sense of where the industry is going and reporting on some of these broad brush themes, are we? There are other people who were at FIP this year, who I gather you caught up with, who do a similar sort of thing.
Yes, it's Juan Senor and John Wilpers from Innovation Media Consulting. They do that every year. They have a speech and they publish a document, a magazine kind of report, a state of the industry. And what I liked about they do, because they're categorical, you know, and this year the main theme is readers must pay, something that I mentioned here before, saying that, you know, you need to use paywall. And it's interesting when I spoke to them, because some countries are trying to innovate. I think in Scandinavia they have something called the dynamic paywalls, which, you know, you can listen to it. What is that in the interview ahead? I think it was very good, clear minds from Juan and John.
The main message this year is that the only way forward for us to get back to an equilibrium, to get back to a level playing field, is to migrate from ad revenue to reader revenue. And we believe strongly that if in 2017 or next year, if you're not charging readers for either their data or their wallet, there's no way forward, because digital advertising revenue will never, ever pay the bills. All that money has been dominated by a duopoly led by Facebook and Google. And some people say that might become a triopoly, if that term actually exists, with Amazon coming up as well quickly behind. So there is no way for you to build this business as we've been trying to build them now, which was volume. And the volume you charge cost per thousand, you charge per traffic, per naked, unadulterated clicks. And that has to end. And the only way back to a balanced business is to create a strong source of reader revenue. And that implies charging for content.
And it's been proven that readers will pay. Because in the beginning, it was all information must be free on the internet, right? But people pretty quickly figured out that all information is also not trustable, it's not reliable. And the reliable content costs money to produce and is worth paying for.
And which media companies do you think are doing well in that sense?
Washington Post, New York Times.
The Economist is doing a fantastic job with reader revenue. Condé Nast is beginning to do a very good job with reader revenue. Monocle is also a very good example. From the very beginning, they had this attitude that if you want to consume us, you have to pay. You're, you know, slowly but gradually and solidly developing that habit. You don't have to come out of an addiction to just dependency on digital ad revenue. And of course, you know, at the beginning, all this was true. And indeed, there was digital ad revenue coming up. But then the audience shifted to social media and they stopped going to our websites as destinations, which is even more troublesome for us, because not only are we losing the potential digital ad revenue, but we're also losing the habit of people visiting our sites, because we've given it all out on the social media platform. So it's been one misstep after the other. It's one bloody blunder after the other. And this has to stop. This has to stop. There has to be some common sense. And we have to have some common purpose. And we need to understand that there is really no sustainable digitally advertising supported business model for publishers. An ad-based business model for publishers is not ever, ever going to balance the books.
And there are all sorts of ways to get this sort of revenue. For example, you both mentioning the dynamic paywalls. I think some countries are doing that, like, for example, in Scandinavia. So can you tell us a bit more about it?
Often our clients, when they ask us to help them with digital reader revenue, they ask us the last questions they should be asking, which is which method should I adopt and adapt to charge for that content? And our message is, that's the last question you want to answer. That's a transactional mechanism, whether it's freemium, hard paywall, whether it's metered and so on. We believe that the question you need to answer first and have a very solid answer to is, do I have any content worth paying for? And what content or what I make will trigger a subscription? And then we're seeing that there is the journey towards a reader revenue model can take you through initially a metered model most of the time. Then you can go to a freemium model. Some areas you create hard paywalls. And finally, there's this new concept called dynamic paywalls. Dynamic paywalls is basically yield software applied to publishing. You know, yield software is what's being used by airlines and what's being used by many other people to indeed match demand with supply. So for instance, if it's London Fashion Week and you have a lot of traffic to Vogue, you're going to introduce a payment mechanism because you know a percentage of those you'll convert into subscribers. And that's what a dynamic paywall is, basically based on demand at the time, during the week, during the month, during a particular moment, you can begin to charge.
Fernando, it's so interesting. And at the risk of sounding wise after the fact, it's amazing how often we come back to this idea that great journalism and good publishing costs money and people need to pay money to access it, but they're actually willing to pay if they're getting a good offer. It isn't as complicated as some would have had us believe during these years when it's been about the digital adaptation or this transition. Actually, in essence, a lot of the fundamental business principles of publishing are the same. You spend money, you make money.
And people are worried sometimes, but the young generation, that's what has been discussed at FIP as well. Well, the young generation, they're also willing to pay. You know, they are already paying for their TV subscription, being Netflix or music, Spotify. With media, it's going to be the same thing. I think this culture of free for all, it's really not the future.
Speaking of the future, a slightly shorter term, I gather you caught up with another good friend of Monocle's actually while you were at the FIP event. We're going to hear next week, Fernando, on the programme from a great editor.
Olivier Roya from Paris Match, which is one of my favorite magazines. And we're going to talk about how it's such a unique magazine because they're one of the few that makes kind of, you know, quite highbrow, like political stories and a little bit more of fluffy celebrity stories. So, yeah, next week we're going to hear from Olivier.
Wonderful stuff. We'll look forward to that. Fernando, good job. Nice reporting from FIP and beyond. That was Fernando Augusto Pacheco here on The Stack. Now, FIP wasn't the only international publishing event on this week. Over in Germany, Frankfurt is hosting the 69th Buchmesse, which wraps up tomorrow, in fact. It's the place where the year's biggest book deals are made, but of course some of the best newspaper and magazine publications are also there. Monocle's Daphne Carnesi spoke to Christoph Arment, editor-in-chief of Zeit magazine and a good friend of Monocle's. He told us about the latest literature special edition of the magazine, but he began by telling us why he expects this year's Buchmesse to get political.
I have a feeling that because of Emmanuel Macron opening up the book fair this year, because France apparently is the guest country, I guess sort of the political situation of Europe is very much on the forefront at the fair. Also, an Austrian writer, Robert Menasse, won the German Book Prize Awards just on Monday. And he wrote a book, a novel about the EU and how sort of the EU has been a topic in Europe. And I just had a live talk here at the stall of Die Zeit, the book fair, with Can Dündar, the Turkish journalist who had to flee from Turkey.
Because obviously censorship is something they also talked a lot about yesterday in the opening ceremony, isn't it?
Exactly. And so we had a conversation about the situation in Turkey, and he said, well, you know, I'm staying optimistic because with Turkey, you never know. Tomorrow, everything can change. I mean, it's a very pessimistic situation right now, but it can change within 24 hours. So that was a really, in a way, surprisingly uplifting talk about someone who's been put in jail. His wife cannot leave the country because they took away her passport. You know, he's in a dramatic situation, but he still keeps up the, you know, high spirits, which is, I think is great.
Tell me about the new magazine. Let's talk about the front cover, maybe. It's a cloud against a clear blue sky, just a single cloud. Tell me about it.
Well, a couple of months ago, I talked to Florian Illis, who's a book writer, bestseller writer, and a famous journalist and journalist. And he told me about his new book, and he showed me the cover of the new book, and it actually showed clouds. And then I remembered that he's a big fan of clouds in the way artists have been trying to figure out how to paint something like a cloud for nearly 200 years. So I asked him, you know, would you be interested in taking care of our literature issue coming out for the book fair, maybe focusing on clouds? And he immediately said, yes, well, let's give it a try. So what we did was we dedicated this whole issue to the phenomenon of clouds. We asked writers like Boto Strauss and Hans Magnus Enzensberger to write about clouds, poems and stories. And we asked photographers like Wolfgang Tillmans, Jürgen Teller, Stephanie Moshammer, Vivian Sassen to send in, you know, their favorite photograph of a cloud. And, well, the most surprising contributor is Gerhard Richter.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said he did some exclusive art for you. So how did that work?
Pretty crazy, because Florian told me that he's been in touch with Gerhard Richter for 20 years. He always, wherever Florian used to work, he used to be the editor of Monopol, the art magazine. He used to be at Frankfurter Allgemeine. He used to be at Zeit as well a couple of years ago. He always tried to convince Gerhard Richter to do some form of collaboration with them. And Richter apparently always said, oh, that really sounds interesting, but thanks, no. But this time, Florian sent him an email asking him, I'm doing another project. I'm again trying to convince you into contributing. And Richter said, well, what's it about? Well, it's about clouds. Well, I have four photographs for you that I've just did this year and last year about clouds.
So it was a coincidence, essentially.
Yeah, and apparently he's also fascinated by clouds. So we have four yet unpublished photographs of Germany's most successful and important contemporary artists in the new issue.
I also actually wanted to ask you what you think of Frankfurt. It's my first time here in the city. I haven't really seen much yet.
Well, Frankfurt is a very unique phenomenon because it's quite small. You can really walk throughout, you know, the city within a couple of hours. But then on the other hand, you have the skyscrapers visualizing the power of money, which is very strong in Frankfurt. Then you have a very lively art scene. So that mix of artists and bankers is really unique. And I love that atmosphere because there's money, there's business, but there are also many people who are, you know, working on new art. So that kind of mix is really unique. And I'm always happy to come to Frankfurt and see new art and see what's happening in the city. About the media situation here, I don't know too much, but one of the most exciting stories that I've been hearing about Frankfurt lately was last night when we had our little event for Zeit magazine. I ran into a DJ that I've been knowing for 20 years, Stefan Hantl, who's also a musician, and his artist name is Chantel. And he told me that he's running for mayor in Frankfurt. And I thought, well, Stefan, are you making fun of me? Is that a joke? And he said, no, I seriously announced my candidacy. He's running as an independent. Next February, it's going to be local elections. And I asked him, you know, why do you do it? I mean, because, you know, he said, well, no, I've been living in Frankfurt for 30 years, traveling the whole world with my music and my concerts everywhere in the world. And Frankfurt is such an exciting place, and it should be even more after the Brexit. But the current mayor is not able to communicate. You know, no one knows even his name. And I had to think of his name, and I think he's right. So he's trying to put Frankfurt on the map again, which I thought was a great idea.
Christoph Arment, editor-in-chief of Zeit magazine, in conversation with Monocle's Daphne Karnazes at this year's Frankfurt Buchmesse. And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our production team, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, Henry Rhys Sheridan, and our editors, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to write to Fernando. He's on fp@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the same time next week. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for tuning in.